Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Governor David Paterson joins us now as the state budget turns 1 week late and the fiscal crisis deepens, which means schools around the state, people on Medicaid, and everyone else remain in doubt about what this fiscal year will bring. One new proposal out today from the Working Families Party, a temporary fiscal crisis tax on the biggest Wall Street bonuses, a 50% tax for the next 2 years on any bonus over $500,000. We'll talk about that and much more. Hi, Governor. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. And let me clear up right away that our Medicaid payments have a federal match. And if we don't make those Medicaid payments, we lose the federal match forever. So people on Medicaid are protected in our emergency appropriations, as is the payment of the state workforce, because that is by decree. And the other thing that we have put in our emergency appropriations are just some savings in case there is a huge disaster. Everything else is kind of bare bones. So these extenders, these emergency appropriations, are different than the ones that took the budgets into May and June and July, and you remember August back in 2001 and 2004. They're different because we are actually in complete austerity and are starting to generate the savings we need right now.
And I want to come back in a few minutes to the question of Medicaid and implications for the state from the new federal health reform law, which I think might have new Medicaid requirements. But for right now, you have a $9 billion budget hole to fill compared to projected revenues, and the budget is a week late. Outside of these emergency measures, what would you say are the biggest substantive differences remaining between you and the legislature holding things up?
Well, my plan would close the $9.2 billion budget deficit, and it closes it with $1.2 billion in revenues, which come from the cigarette taxes and the sugar-enhanced drink taxes. And, of course, the legislature is resisting this, and I can appreciate some of the issues that they're raising, but we do spend over $15 billion a year in health care to treat heart disease and emphysema and cancer, diabetes, and obesity, which are generated by these products. And all we're saying is that the people who consume those products should help us pay for them, and that the savings would have gone directly into our health care system, mitigating some of the health care cuts that we would have to impose otherwise. The other substantive difference is that right now I have closed about $6 billion in real and recurring cuts, and the two legislative bodies have about two-thirds of that separately, but together have only a little more than half of those cuts. And so I'd say that's another substantive difference between us and them at this particular time. And the third is that we have a lieutenant governor who we were fortunate to appoint, who had a lot of experience dealing with the fiscal crisis of the 70s, which became a huge encumbrance to New York City and New York State. And he came out with a plan that has a lot of variables in it, and the only one that the legislature seems to be embracing is borrowing. It would set a limit on borrowing. He was saying that there always is borrowing, and he wanted to set some guidelines. And what's happened is that his plan has been treated as if it's a la carte, and all we're hearing about is the borrowing, which really should be the last resort, because we're paying $6.2 billion this year in debt service for all the borrowing that we generated in the past. Between 1994 and the present, we our overall state debt went from about $22 billion to over $50 billion. So we have borrowed into the abyss. So we don't need to do that anymore.
Governor, are you disappointed as a lifelong fighter for social justice that you've had to spend most of your governorship arguing for the legislature to make cuts to health and education?
Yes, I am. It's been the first day that I was sworn in. I should have known what was coming, because that was the day that the Fed saved Bear Stearns. And so almost really every day of my term as governor has been fraught with cutbacks, with disappointment, with vetoing bills that I actually introduced. Now, other than having multiple personality, I don't know how I would do something like that. And it's very painful, and it's heart-wrenching. And even the ability to express it, it's difficult for me because, I mean, I've been on your show for years advocating for health care and education. There were many times that I thought we balanced our budgets on the backs of the poor, and others when I thought there were other means to balance the budget than the ones that we imposed. But we're in a situation now where I think that the need to keep our state solvent has become non-ideological. We've got to do the things that the Democrats are suggesting. We've got to do the things that the independents are suggesting. Things that the Republicans are suggesting, we have to, in every way possible, avoid getting on that list of states. And I thought it was very interesting that you had the gentleman John Shuey on from the Budget and Policy Institute, and he talked about the states of Nevada and Illinois and Michigan, and even our neighboring state of Connecticut, along with Arizona and Colorado. They are the top states. California is, I think, 14th on the list. New York is not in the top 30. We need to do everything we can to tighten our belts and stay there, because that would prime us at some point to escape from this recession, certainly far later than we expected.
The Working Families Party might disagree with you about there being no ideological positions. They are proposing that temporary two-year tax of 50% on Wall Street bonuses over $500,000, 25% on Wall Street bonuses from $250,000 to $500,000. Are you open to that? Think that's a good idea?
No, Brian. First of all, if you remember, our original deficit projection was $0.4 billion, and we revised it to about $8.2 billion. It's now at $9.2. The revision came from about $560 million that we did not receive from Wall Street bonuses this year because the companies are putting their bonuses in stocks, not in cash. So you can't even tax that. So I don't really know what the Working Families Party, who I'm sure is trying to find some good solutions, is thinking about, because we are suffering because of the changes that Wall Street has made. It's my opinion that when the federal government started beating up on the executives that got bonuses and capital gains, that at the same time, the federal government has a tax plan that allows Wall Street to escape from its obligations in ways in which they actually dedicate their tax over states based on where the deals are conducted and where the sales are finalized, almost eliminating the taxes that they have to pay to New York. And then they also are, they have very favorable benefits create a situation where the companies don't pay much taxes at all. So what inevitably happens is when you take the bonuses away from the employees, you're just putting it back in the firms, and you're not getting taxes at all. And what, because of the public relations, what the firms have done with their bonus packages for the employees is deferred them into stocks, which don't call for any taxing at all. There was a proposal also this year from some of the public employee unions for a transfer tax, but the transfer tax really was preempted between 1978 and 1981, specifically because the whole industry is now more electronic, and the geographic location is no longer important. And if you want Wall Street to become a street in New Jersey or Greenwich, Connecticut, that's the fastest way to get those companies to move.
A stock transfer tax. Governor David Patterson, my guest on WNYC. We're collecting some questions for him on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Matt wrote in this question on what we were just talking about. Is it true that there's no inheritance tax in New York State? And if so, what about imposing that?
Currently, I think there's a gap in the inheritance tax.
That's the federal one. I don't know if New York has one or not.
And I don't either. So maybe by the end of the program, I can get someone to give us an answer for that.
Governor Christie in New Jersey is offering more state aid to school districts that get teachers to freeze their pay for a year. Have you considered proposing something like that for New York?
Well, that it's certainly something we could consider. Right now, we have had to defer $2.1 billion to school districts all around the state because the state ran out of money in the end of March, as it did in the end of December. And we owed $14 billion, and we had $11.9 billion, so we were $2 billion short. And that deferred payment got us through. Certainly, where workers are wishing to help us by making sacrifices, I think we can try to meet them on the other end. But the biggest problem that we have, Brian, is when we sit down and we start talking to people about making sacrifices, we needed $250 million in workforce reductions this year. And we talked to the public employee unions, and I don't want to be antagonistic to them. They actually were the first unions to agree to Tier 5, which is going to save us $38 billion over the next 30 years. But notwithstanding, what they wanted to do was to open up their contract and extend it 4 years longer by giving us the aggressive attrition that we needed in the workforce. And right now, we are not in position to make to create a promise for a promise or a contract where both parties give. We're not in position to give because we are literally running out of money. And that's what I think has only become an understanding to people over the last couple of months, because when I tried to say it over the last 2 years, it was always somebody who would get up and say, the governor's an alarmist, he's Chicken Little, he says the sky is falling. Well, the fact is the day of reckoning really is here, and we're not in the position that other states are to meet to meet the sacrifices with those costs.
Governor,
right.
Also on education, I gather you do want New York to compete again for the federal Race to the Top grants, which we didn't get one of in this current round from the Obama administration. Are you going to do something new to lift the cap on charter schools? That's one of the requirements. And make it easier to fire bad teachers or tie teacher pay to performance more, which the Fed seemed to be looking for?
Well, the teacher performance piece will probably alleviate itself because it's going to sunset in June. That would gain us back about 13 points to get closer to the top in the Race to the Top competition. The issue of charter schools, we'd have to raise them from 200 where they are now. 404 was the number that I think would have gotten us the full number of points we would have needed in that part of the application. And the two other areas, one of them you pointed out, which is the getting rid of bad teachers, is something that we're continuing to try to negotiate. And the other was the number of education-affiliated organizations, such as the unions, that bought in to the Race to the Top competition, where we were low compared to the other states. But had we done what I asked the legislature to do in January, we would have been 2 points behind the state of Tennessee, which finished second to Delaware in the competition. And it's just unfortunate because that's $500 to $700 million, which I think would come in handy during this deficit reduction that we're trying to accomplish in the budget process.
Governor, on another topic altogether, but also pertaining to children, something that we've covered on the show, I'm curious what the status is of the state's negotiations with the U.S. Department of Justice. It's been 9 months since they released the findings of their investigation that found New York State guilty of violating children's constitutional rights at the detention facilities. Have negotiations stalled? Are the feds going to take over the state's juvenile justice system as they've threatened to do?
No, we're still talking to them, and I would hope that we're in full compliance with the requests that they are making. And it's one of the reasons that while in this budget negotiation everyone's calling for layoffs, it's exactly OMRDD, the Office of Mental Retardation and Developmental Disability, and we're going to take the word retardation out of that title soon, and the Office of Mental Health. These are the areas where we could really not think about seriously cutting back workers when it was found a couple, shortly back that the state was not performing in a manner that met the constitutional rights of those housed in those facilities. So in order to do that, we're going to need that entire workforce, because in many, many parts of the criticism, they've said that we've come up short.
So this is a negotiation that's still taking place. Are you planning on implementing the recommendations of your task force, which was chaired by John Jay College President Jeremy Travis? Any that you will implement, any that you won't implement?
At this point, we found that the greater number of recommendations that they made, where our resources will permit, should be implemented. They did an outstanding job.
Anything in particular that you've acted on or can say that you will act on that would be new?
From the time they issued the report, which was in late January, to right now, I would have to go back and check for you, Brian, to see if we've actually implemented anything to this point.
Changing topics again, and I said I'd come back to this. I'm curious if you've been crunching numbers regarding the impact of the federal health reform law on New York State. Do you see either any big new liabilities or benefits?
We thought we would lose about $1 billion a year, but we thought that that would not get into effect until the year 2014. And our senators, Senator Schumer and Senator Gillibrand, have told us that they think that what they can get us back in terms of a change in the percentage of Medicaid money that we receive would mitigate that. But actually, mitigation itself is not New York's problem. New York's problem is that we receive less Medicaid than any other state. We're tied for last at 50%. And the fact that because the way the money is dispersed, New York has never gotten its fair share, because our poverty rate is 22% higher than the national average, and Medicaid should be measured based on poverty rate and not per capita income, which it is.
So we were talking on yesterday's show about a theory that the new law could become a backdoor route to a national single-payer system, because it puts so much pressure on state budgets by expanding Medicaid rolls so much that all the governors will eventually go howling to Washington for relief, and gradually they'll pick up more and more. Does that sound plausible?
It is plausible, Brian, because the encumbrances that have been placed on the states in a few areas, Medicaid not being the very least of them, is going to create some sort of system. And what you're seeing right now is, while the private sector is coming out of the recession, the state budget deficits are greater in 2010, 2011 than 2009, and a lot of that is attributed to Medicaid. The problem New York State had with the bill is that we had pretty much filled up the Medicaid rolls as much as we could and got no benefit and got really no reward for doing the work that the federal government is now imposing on the other states. It's very interesting. The same process that would have won you money in Race to the Top actually lost us money in the Federal Health Care Reform Act.
So is this bad for New York? Some states are suing the federal government, claiming it's unconstitutional to have the individual mandate.
I don't think it's bad to add $30 million to the health and insurance rolls. I don't think it's bad to
30 million people.
The 30 million people, and to be restricting the insurance companies the way this bill does. If I were in Washington, I would have gladly voted for the bill. It does have some glitches that do hurt New York, but we were proud to support the bill, and we figure with the same president who was sensitive enough to push as hard as he did to pass the bill, that he'll be able to come back and clean up some of the loose ends. We're depending on it, but we also believe in him.
Governor, listener wants to know, if the legislature passes a medical marijuana bill while you're still in office, will you sign it?
Well, as a rule, I don't discuss legislation that I haven't seen as to whether or not I would sign it one way or the other. But I would just say that I think it's clear that medical marijuana has particularly been effective in treating cancer patients, and particularly those who are going through extreme treatments as a painkiller, and under control and used properly. As an idea, it sounds good. Now, as a piece of legislation, I'd have to see it.
Governor David Patterson with us for just another few minutes here on WNYC On the investigation into your activities surrounding your aide, David Johnson, and the domestic abuse claim by his former girlfriend, have you met with Judge Kaye yet?
No, I have not.
The Times reported that you personally helped draft a statement in February that you hoped would be endorsed by the woman, that you proposed language asserting that there had been no violence in the encounter, according to three people with knowledge of your role, says the Times. Do you deny that that happened?
I'm going to discuss that when the opportunity comes to speak before Judge Kaye. I've been an advocate to prevent domestic violence for over 20 years. It's very difficult for me to hear charges like that being made against me, but I'll get my opportunity to speak. And the first place I would prefer to speak would be before the investigation, which is what they ask most witnesses to do.
So you don't want to just say yes or no as to whether that happened as reported?
It wouldn't be an answer. Listen, no, I don't want to say yes or no.
Just one other thing then, because you've already acknowledged to the Times, I gather, that you talked to the woman on the phone the night before the scheduled court date, and then she failed to show up the next day. Is there any way such a phone conversation could be appropriate, given your position as governor?
Brian, I have made it a practice not to answer questions about the investigation. It leads to the situation where leading questions can be asked that would appear to have instant answers one way or the other, but that's actually not true, and that's why they're having an investigation, and that's why I'm going to be very happy to testify before them.
Last question, another from our listeners, and this is about the sugary drinks tax. The listener writes, kids are not going to buy milk at a bodega unless it has chocolate in it. All fruit juices, concentrated or not, organic or not, are high in sugar content with next to no nutritional value. Bottled water is not good for the environment, and water purification for bottled water is unregulated, plus you're already taxing that, says JP. Realistically, what drinks are there that are sold anywhere that kids will buy on their own that's not full of sugar?
Well, it has been demonstrated that when the cost for the sugary drinks is higher, that children do buy other drinks that are less, they're not altogether pure, that are less dangerous than particularly the sodas that they're borrowing, which have zero impact in terms of nutrition and are very high in calories and have caused a 60% increase in obesity among young people, which is now over 25% for the entire state population and now 35% among minority kids. The argument that's being waged here is that the perfect is the enemy of the good. And the fact is that we've got to do something to reverse what is going to be the biggest healthcare argument in the beginning of this century, analogous to the smoking arguments that were made in the 60s. And what they have done to impact on our healthcare system merits that we at some point start reacting to it. And this is why I propose this 2 years in a row. And even if it's rejected 2 years in a row, when I'm out of government, I will still continue to advocate to try to limit the obesity and pre-diabetic conditions that exist in communities around this state. We never had health care facilities for teenage stroke, teenage heart attack, and pre-diabetic conditions at 9 years old as we have in this generation, and I'd like to be one of those who would want to stop it as soon as possible.
Governor David Patterson, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Allison from our Help Wanted job hunting group decides to leave her full-time gig and go freelance. Maybe some of you will call up to give Allison some advice about surviving the freelance life. And more Help Wanted, we'll have Stephen Greenhouse from the New York Times on when it's illegal for companies to use non-student adults as unpaid interns. In fact, on our website right now, we're collecting your suggestions for an intern's bill of rights. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll talk to Allison from our Help Wanted group in a minute.